From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The computer's not working.
Computer says no.
We're just going to have to, what do we do? Hang on. The Dice Men Cometh. You talk while I do that.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Dice Men Cometh. I'm Mark, here's Trent.
Tell you what, the ukulele chords are just G, C, D. Just repeat that in your head
okay.
Ad infinitum,
yep.
And we'll tell you what's coming up in the show tonight, because this is The Dice Men Cometh, the show every week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM that talks about board games and or card games and indeed miniature wargaming, which is what we're going to be talking about for at least part of tonight.
Oh, absolutely. We have got a show that is full of stuff tonight. Seat of the Pants Radio here, Sons Computers. We are having a special guest in the studio, Mike from the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club. He's going to talk to us about all things war and gaming and wargaming. We've got an interview with Neil Thompson from BorderCon, the fabulous convention that's coming up in Albury later this year that we are going to. We're going to talk about what were we gaming in the 80s, and we're going to talk about hogs. We're making bacon. We're rolling in the mud. We are growing like berserk.
And speaking of the 80s, hey, at least the CD player works.
Woohoo!
All right, this is a little tune to get us started this evening, but I suggest you turn up very, very loud. If anyone tells you that cock rock gave us nothing in the 80s, this, ladies and gentlemen, is where you point them. Because from 1984, this is Van Halen.
Woo!
That's what I call a big rock finish, but we are just getting started on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark on the Dice Men Cometh. Van Halen from the early 80s. Take me back, Mark.
Early 80s. I know some people that weren't even born in the early 80s.
Good Lord, who are listening to this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now. And I thought, just because, look, I did want to play something from the 80s. So I'm feeling a little bit nostalgic at the moment. And I just wanted to maybe paint a little bit of a picture tonight, if I could, about what life as a gaming nerd was like back in the 80s, because I can tell you, quite frankly, it wasn't all sunshine, lollipops and rainbows.
It was a bit bleak, really, wasn't
it?
Well,
the only rainbows were on the happy pants that we were all wearing. That goes without saying. Those drawstring pants. No one was allowed to wear socks back then. No, look, I jest, of course. What games were we playing in the 80s? What was around? Were there games in the 80s?
Well, I'll tell you what. I discovered this thing called role-playing.
Of course.
For me, the 80s was the introduction to Dungeons & Dragons. Mm. Later on, I moved to a little science fiction system called Traveller.
Did your parents encourage this?
No, they didn't really know.
No,
they didn't really
know. What are you wasting your time with that rubbish for?
What are you reading that book with the dragon on the front again?
I always did wonder why my mother sounded like Terry Gilliam from Monty Python, but there you go. The only games we had in the house growing up were things like Uno. And the forgotten sequel, Oh No 99.
Well, I had Go to the Top of the Class, which is a very educational game, and Payday.
Payday,
and
remember.
Of course, Monopoly.
Yeah, that's a standard. And Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah.
Okay, it's hard to imagine now, but Trivial Pursuit, at the time that it came out,
was groundbreaking.
It was really sweeping the world. Mm. It was a real craze. And by the time it arrived in Australia and you were seeing it advertised, you were already being told that every household in America had a copy of this somewhere in the cupboard, and so you just had to get on board. And, of course, we got it. We opened up the questions in that first Genesis edition. I didn't know anything.
I know. It was like, oh, my God, I can answer two questions off this card. Woo!
So slowly but surely the easier versions came out. Look, 1981 was a bit of a watershed year. Looking back at Board Game Geek, you had Car Wars from Steve Jackson Games. Of course, you know my affection for them. Axis and Allies came out. That's also the same year that Trivial Pursuit arrived. And then, yeah, you had all the mass market games, Operation, Connect Four, Mousetrap. All these things are sort of around more or less now at the time. And also in the hobby gaming sphere, a lot of titles that people would be familiar with now got their first incarnation in the 80s. Games like Civilization.
Ah, yes.
Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Yes.
Aikusa or Kremlin.
Believe it or not, Arkham Horror even came out in the 80s. I couldn't quite believe it myself.
A game which I know you're particularly fond of, Demarca.
Ah, yes. That was the first big Euro game.
That's like an epic game of German politics.
Yeah, it takes like 5 hours. There's like 13 phases in each round.
And I guess one thing that was notable about the 80s was that your printing and production technology was not all there.
It was the time of the chits.
Yeah, cardboard chits everywhere you looked. And a lot of them came in those A4-sized boxes.
Ziploc bags?
No. I'm thinking of the, you know, board games like Asteroids or the Games Workshop boxes.
Yeah.
Slightly larger than A4.
Yeah.
Maybe around about the same size as the
bookshelf
sizes. The original red box of Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. That size. Games Workshops was such a huge company in the 80s. That was Steve Jackson, the other Steve Jackson from England, and Ian Livingstone. The guys who...
Was he in Jethro Tull? No, that was Ian someone else, wasn't it?
For the life of me, I can't think of that guy's name, and that's going to bother me all night.
Yeah.
The guy who wore the tights and played the flute.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
That's going to bother me all night now. You mongrel.
Well, look, for me, I joined the Navy in the 80s, and, you know, hey, there were a few war gamers there. What a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of war games.
Oh, yeah, but things like that I started on, things like Kingmaker,
okay,
which is still around today, you know, a game of the, which is covering the War of the Roses between the houses of Lancaster and York in England. As I said, I got into role-playing. And then in the Navy, everyone played cards. So 500... I was almost going to say the name of the card game that I can't even say. Hearts or Spades, which was known by a few other names in the Navy that
sure,
I can't repeat.
I'm sure.
And would you believe it or not, we played this game called Uckers. Have you ever heard of Uckers?
I'm sorry, no.
Uckers is Ludo. But the you know how you have that game board that looks almost like a swastika? You've got four people moving into the center.
Is this the one with the bubble in the middle?
No, we didn't have the bubble, but it's the same game basically. But Uckers is the pieces that you use in Uckers are about the bottom 2 centimeters of a 50 caliber machine gun shell cut off,
of course,
and painted in four primary colours.
Of course they are.
It's still played to this day. That's Uckers. Look it up.
Hey, we're going to be talking about miniatures games in a little while with Mike Davies from the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club based here in Hobart in Tassie. Games Workshop, of course, the company that produces the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K miniatures, started in the 80s. Mm. Steve Jackson, Ian Livingstone, as I was saying, and also launched White Dwarf magazine. So,
yes.
Yeah, which is still going now. They got bought out in the 90s and just went completely solely into miniatures.
Mm.
But looking back, I think, you know, there was some nice memories, some nice nostalgia there in the 80s, but when you actually get your hands on the games that were around at the time, the production quality wasn't there.
They don't really compare to what we have today.
The artwork wasn't there. You kind of had to squint a little bit with your brain, I think, because you
squint
knew...
Squint with your brain. There's a new one.
You knew that there was a good game in here somewhere if you could just get past how ugly it all looked.
Mm.
So I think we can all be very thankful that we're here living in the world of tomorrow, the 21st century.
But hey, but even back in the 80s, as far as gaming goes, we just couldn't get enough.
Oh, my God. Mike Davies from the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club in next on The Dice Men Cometh.
When it comes to board games or 80s music, I just can't get enough. You are listening to The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Is the computer working again yet?
No,
we have to sit through some more of your music tonight?
It's okay. I've got some non-80s music to play later maybe, but for now, we have a special guest in the studio, Mike from the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Move in closer to the mic, Mike.
You got him on?
We have.
All right.
Go.
Hello. Yes. Welcome. Thank you for coming in. Now, hang on. You seriously haven't got... There.
Try that.
Okay.
How's that?
Now I think we've got your microphone.
Mike,
working.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, there he is.
You sure you don't want me to come over there and push those buttons for you, Mark?
You're pushing my buttons, man.
Okay. Mike, Van Diemen's Wargaming Club. Now, as you might be aware, we are part of the Hobart Gaming Society, and lo and behold, Hobart is rapidly becoming known as a gaming mecca in Australia, tucked away down here at the bottom of the country, because you guys are running an entirely separate group. It's been running for years in Hobart. Tell us all about it, please.
Oh, about, it's been running, from my understanding, a little over 10 years now. I've been running it for about 3 years. It originally started off at the Rosny Library, I believe, and now it's at the Brisbane Hotel. Yeah. It's an event where people get to go to get away from playing in their backyard sheds and playing at the local gaming club, where you can actually sit down with a bunch of friends and have a nice beer and a burger to kill some time while you're playing games.
And it's not just miniatures.
It's not just miniatures.
All sorts of stuff.
We get quite a few different people playing with miniatures. They play X-Wing, they play War Machine, they play tabletop games, Zombicide. Whatever anybody wants to come down with, they're pretty much welcome to play it.
And we're going to get into details on what some of these games are all about in a minute. But look, just first, you were telling me before an amusing tale of how you ended up running this club, kind of almost by default, which is what often happens with these little community groups.
The two of the guys that were running it weren't really playing anymore, but kept running the club for a long period of time. And they got to the point in their lives where they're, I guess, a bit over it. And one day offered to take the stuff home for him because he was looking pretty tired. Been running it ever since.
Sounds like us. Who's going to take the basket this week? Not me. And did I hear you say Zombicide, Mike? Because that's a board game. You're playing board games at your club?
Yeah, we play board games. We Talisman and a couple of the Games Workshop and
Fantasy Flight type games
that they've come out with. Everybody loves them. It's not tabletop wargaming, but it's just a club for people to get together and, like I said, more or less have a beer and a burger.
And pretty much what we see is so many people in our hobby, all of us, you know, they play board games, they play card games, they play miniatures. Like I have X-Wing. Okay. You touch across so many of the genres. It's obviously the same in your group.
Oh, everybody in our genre plays multiple different systems. The majority of the people play at least 2 to 3 systems, bridging across between the card games, the board games, the tabletop wargaming, to the role-playing games and everything else. It's a genre of, I think it's just a genre of people that just like something to do with games where they actually get to think with their mind.
Yeah.
outside of just watching a visual game on a television.
Yeah,
so. And definitely, of course, it's a social thing as well.
Oh, yes. It's the best aspect of it.
Although my sort of understanding of it, or my perception of it anyway, is that there is a sort of nerd schism between people who play miniature games and other systems, maybe similar to those who play purely role-playing systems. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that's not been...
I don't find that in the Tasmanian community. Like originally growing up in Toronto, it seemed to be your card players played cards and your role players played role playing games and your tabletop gamers would have played tabletop games.
Yeah, so this is like back in the 80s when people who liked rock weren't allowed to listen to rap music and vice versa. Yeah.
But nowadays I just seem to find everybody at least in the Hobart community seems to play multiple systems of everything. Okay. Like I personally play Warhammer 40K, Magic the Gathering, and I play Magic the Gathering in all the different leagues. I just got back into that. I love X-Wing with an absolute passion. It's a hilarious game.
Yeah, it's a great game, isn't it?
The living card games, the Star Wars living card games, which are just the Fantasy Flight system, and most things Fantasy Flight seem to be coming out to be really good. But I just find, in Hobart and in Tasmania, I just seem to find that the majority of people play multiple systems.
Have you ventured into the Game of Thrones living card game?
Not yet.
If you're a Magic fan, you will love Game of Thrones. It's just Magic.
Now, one thing that all of these systems have in common is huge investments in time, huge investments in money. And I think that for me, because look, neither Mark nor I are miniature gamers, and I look at it and I go, wow, okay, that looks incredible, that looks expensive, and I have got no idea what's going on with it. So look, talk me through it. What's the appeal? What are the main systems people are playing? If I wanted to get into it, where would I start? And how much money should I hand over?
It's pretty simple. You have to sit there and decide what is the look you like. Like War Machine is very, very steampunk.
Right.
Very, very steampunk and very, very magical. Like you have your, because it's Warma Hordes. War Machine is actually called Warma Hordes. It's actually two different systems that merge together to play one game.
And are War Machines and Warma Hordes part of Warhammer?
No, that's Privateer Press.
Entirely separate.
Yeah, entirely separate system. Warhammer and Fantasy as basically speaks for itself. You have Warhammer 40K, which is the year 40K, and Fantasy, which is all your demons and dragons and wizards and warlocks and trolls and everything else.
And that's the stuff that dates back to the 80s.
Dates back to the 80s. Yeah. But even 40K dates back to the 80s. I believe it came out in the mid-80s. And you just sit there and decide whether you want to go with a sci-fi genre or a fantasy genre or a steampunk genre. Each different system has its own...
And the other thing that interests me with these is that because they've been around for so long... There's actually a perpetual steady universe that's built up around the games. There's stories that's built up around them and major events as well.
All the Games Workshop stuff. They have a lot of books and everything else that come out to build fluff around it and to build the storylines and the back characters and everything else of all the little characters in the game. Like most of your special characters in the Fantasy and 40K universe, each would have their own novel.
Yeah.
They would have written a novel about those characters. And it's not just 40K. You also have 30K, which comes out, which is pre-Heresy, which is another system all of its own.
Sorry, Mark, what are you saying?
Oh, I'm saying I am so impressed with all this stuff that I'd like to come back and talk some more Mike in a few minutes.
Right.
Maybe.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Edge Radio 99.3 FM, I would like to apologise for the schmozzle of tonight's show. Given that we've lost our computer, we're just making it up as we go. You'll just have to bear with us because... We're awesome.
Hey, but I was impressed. Well, not many people might be impressed with my button pressing skills, but they might be giants. They were impressed. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark and our special guest Mike from the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club. There's so much more to hear about this hobby.
Yeah, look, we were just talking off air. You started playing miniature games because you quit smoking?
Yeah, it's about a little over 4 years ago. I was looking for something to keep my hands busy because I just quit smoking, and I decided I was going to paint little lead Civil War miniatures. And I was at work, and one of the guys at work was sitting in his security booth, guarding us really well, painting up a miniature. And I walked in, I asked him what he was doing. He says, "Oh, I'm painting a space marine." It's like, what's that?
So did you have a background in historical miniatures this?
No? Nothing. I just thought it'd be fun to find something to do to keep my hands busy, and that was it.
Okay.
And had no interest in tabletop gaming at all at that point in time.
All right, so do you think that you're spending more money or less money on miniatures than you were on smoking?
I was a pretty heavy smoker, so you couldn't keep up. It was about $140 a week on cigarettes, and you couldn't spend that on miniatures and paint. Wasn't possible.
If you tried, my God.
Now, I was actually going out once a month, spending my cigarette money on miniatures, and they were just piling up in boxes without being touched.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, look, congratulations. I mean, if nothing else, that's great. So... To get an answer to my previous question, how much money are we looking at to get set up to play, not at tournament level, but, you know, as a serious hobby gamer?
Well, it depends on, like, say, serious hobby gamer. A standard tournament is 1850 points for 40K, around 2500 points for Fantasy, 35 points for Warma Hordes.
Now, when you say points, what do you mean?
Points is the actual cost out of your rule book to actually put the models on the table.
Okay.
So you're not looking at a dollar value, and every army varies in price between all the different systems. But usually, roughly, you can get a starter army for about $400 to $500, and play from there.
Sign me up, quick.
And of course, then there's all the time in doing the painting. Now you're painting yourself.
Yeah, I do. I do some of my painting myself. I have a couple of armies I'm painting myself, but I'm really a competitive person. I love to just play.
Yeah.
And I've paid a few people to paint some of my armies.
Well, there's a whole industry employing other people to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I must admit, it's one of the things that's always put me off because, I'll play anything. I've painted some miniatures from board games and it takes so long and I'm never happy with the result. So for someone who's not a painter, is there an entry into this hobby apart from shelling out to get someone else to paint it for you?
For 40K and Fantasy, all you have to do is basically get three colors on it. So you just basically undercoat it, spray it a primary color, and put two other colors over top of it, and that's it. With a little bit of basing material, you can do it so basically. It doesn't have to look pretty. It just has to be what they call tabletop standard, which is three colors and based, which is just flock on the base.
Oh, okay. And are these set colors that you're supposed to paint them according to the rules?
You can paint them hot pink, green.
I want to paint some hot pink miniatures. That's it.
There is Little Mermaid miniatures out there that can paint them.
Now, I'm also seeing a lot of Middle Earth miniatures out at the moment. Games Workshop is doing a system based on The Hobbit. Is that
right? Yeah, there's a system for Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and everything else. I think there's just about a system for almost anything you can imagine coming out at this point in time.
I've seen some like really large ships, like a nautical war system.
There's nautical war systems. Citadel Games has a nautical war system. There's a couple of different companies that have nautical war systems or aerial systems, aerial combat systems like X-Wing. There's a few different systems.
Wings of War, which I think now is Flames of War.
Flames of War is actually your World War II army system with all tanks and they've just had this weekend past the Kingston Cup, which goes on up in Kingston. There's a large group of your 1942 players out there.
Okay, so if we're looking at our main systems, we've got Warhammer Fantasy, Warhammer 40K, what are the major
X-Wing,
ones?
X-Wing, yeah. Warhammer Hordes, and Flames of War.
Okay, so Flames of War, World War II sim,
World War II sim, will always be popular.
Okay, now, we can see some of this played, or even maybe have a crack ourselves, at the next meeting of the Van Diemen's War Gaming Club?
Van Diemen's War Gaming Club is held the fourth Tuesday of every month at the Brisbane Hotel, which is a strange spot to have it, but they provide us with the band room.
Now, look, I understand the Brisbane Hotel has been very, very welcoming to your club, which is fantastic.
More than welcoming to us. Doesn't matter whether we have three people show up or 30 people show up, they're happy to have us there.
Wow.
And you can have underage kids coming in as well?
We can have underage kids as long as they're supervised till 9 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
And they have to, by the bylaws, order a meal at the bar.
Right, sure. Okay, so fourth Tuesday of every month at the Brisbane, and of course we're also going to be seeing some of this at Devil Island coming up in August. This is the huge convention that Area 52 is running, which is getting the Hobart Game Society and our Winter Games Fest happening upstairs at the same time from where there's a bunch of these tournaments happening.
Yes, the Van Diemen's Club is proudly sponsored by Area 52. They've been supporting the club for a long time.
Yep.
All the terrain that we use is supplied to us by Area 52, other than the stuff that we've managed to purchase ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Mike Davies, thank you very much for coming in, telling us a little bit about the hobby. I think the Hobart Game Society and the Van Diemen's Wargaming Club have a lot to talk about.
I'd like to see you guys, there. Bring your board games, come down, have a couple of beers and burgers. The food at the Brisbane is fantastic.
Beers and burgers and games.
It sounds
terrible.
Now, you know what I've wondered?
I've wondered if you've queued up the next song correctly.
Yeah, I have. But, there are all these sort of different miniatures. Mm. So you get monsters, you get trolls, you get wizards. Do you have any Japanese cowboys? You're listening to Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men, Cometh, Trent and Mark. That, of course, was Ween with Japanese Cowboy. And thanks again to Mike from the Van Diemen's Board Gaming Club. It is quite a fascinating area of the hobby I don't know much about.
Yeah, and look, also, I mean, just for us, because, of course, we're part of the Hobart Game Society, and it's like there's this entirely separate sort of group from us operating down here. And, of course, it's, the more the merrier. And, the hobbies to... I don't want to say small, but I do mean small.
Yeah, in a town like Hobart.
Yeah, for people, or in any town, really, you know, for people to be over in separate camps all the time. So it's really great to be able to forge these connections, and it's something that I endorse that other people do in their hometowns as well, and get over our little feuds about who plays what or who said what or who did what to who 10 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, something we normally start the show, but we haven't got to it yet. So, Trent, let me ask you, what have you been playing?
Oh, my God, I forgot all about this.
Yeah.
What have I been playing lately? Look, a few bits and pieces, but frankly, can I be honest?
Yeah.
I've been having a really crap time at work lately.
Oh, no.
And I've been coming home just absolutely zonked, and I haven't wanted to do too much. So last Friday I busted out something really simple, Carcassonne.
Oh, yeah.
Carcassonne, the classic gateway game that anyone can play. Sometimes you just want to play something light, you know, with just really simple rules, and it couldn't get any simpler with Carcassonne.
Mm.
Draw a tile out of the bag, put it down, maybe play a meeple on top of it. It's the multi-award-winning classic German game. All the tiles... Do I have to explain Carcassonne?
Probably, because there may be some people out there who've been, you know, in a cave since the end of World War II, still think the war's going on.
All these little square tiles in Carcassonne, and you draw them blind out of a bag. They depict the little walled town of Carcassonne and roads, and you've got to put them down like a jigsaw, forming a complete town or a complete road that begins and ends with intersections. And you put your little meeples down, the little wooden men. I suppose they could be wooden women. We don't always be sexist about
women,
it, do we?
Wooden people. That's where the name meeple came from.
Thank you. And to claim ownership of those roads and towns and also the fields around them, nothing could be simpler. But the great thing about this is that it is possible to play it like a bastard.
Yes, yes,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not sure what the upper limit with Carcassonne's players is, like if it can play four or five.
You can with expansions, you can go to six, I believe, and I have played a mega Carcassonne with about five or six expansions where it's taken up the space of this whole desk.
Does it
get a bit heavy to handle.
There's so many expansions.
Yeah, look, it's a fabulous two-player game, actually. I'm looking forward to introducing a new friend of mine to Carcassonne as a two-player game.
That's exactly
exactly.
So moving on from the other two-player games that you've been playing. What else? What else have you been playing lately that's clean to put on the radio, Mark?
Okay. Look, speaking of playing games with new people, I played a game, you mentioned it recently, Pandemic. With the In the Lab expansion, because remember, I hadn't played it. You talked about it last week.
That's right. I bagged it.
Yeah, you did.
I remember correctly.
And then a friend of mine said, hey, I'd really like to try that game. And my first thought was, oh, no. But I gave it a run. And, look, I enjoyed it. I played it with some science-y type people. They loved the In the Lab expansion because they felt like they were doing science at the same time as they were playing a game. To me, the In the Lab expansion didn't add a lot, maybe added a little bit of time. So I can take it or leave it. But as I said, for the people that I played with, they really enjoyed that part of the game.
Did you find that it made the game harder?
Yeah, well,
unnecessarily.
Oh, I don't know about unnecessarily, but we got our backsides kicked in the first game in 15 minutes.
Okay.
So we went, well, now we know how In the Lab works, let's set it up and play again. So we actually played a second game, and we won on the last possible turn of the game.
Okay.
So the cards would have run out if we played one more turn.
So that's tension coming right down to
Absolutely.
The wire. That sounds like a great game.
Yeah, it was. And look, just to touch on, there is the whole Pandemic 2.0 where they've came out with the translucent cubes and made it all very, you know, tickety-boo.
Yeah, it looks great.
Look, I have the old one with the wooden cubes. I don't see the need to upgrade. The problem is, of course, is In the Lab only comes in 2.0 form.
Right.
I think you can buy a conversion kit to convert your 1.0 to 2.0 with the cards and everything. Mm-hmm. But I don't like how they did that, so you're basically almost forced to go out and buy a brand new base game. I won't be buying a new base game.
And this is my problem with the way Pandemic is going, because, of course, as we said, there's also this other dice game that's coming out soon. To me, this just feels like you're milking the property for all it's worth.
Yeah.
What I think they should be concentrating on is getting a game like Pandemic into stores like Target, into stores like Walmart in the States and trying to take a great game, and it is a great game. I don't want to mess around with it. A great game like Pandemic and taking it mainstream, and finally getting some competition for things like Bloody Monopoly or Kinect 4 and all that rubbish that's sitting there in all those mainstream toy stores all the time, because people think that without exposure to something different, they think that's all board games are.
Actually, I think Pandemic may be one of the games that, in America at least, is carrying the As Seen on Tabletop sticker and has gone into Targets and places like that.
Well, then in that case, I take back everything I just said.
Yeah. We are going to come back and talk about some more board games in a minute, but we're going to have some music now.
We're also going to be talking to Neil Thompson from BorderCon. He's one of the organisers for the upcoming event in June in Albury, and in fact, maybe we'll talk to him next, I think, on the Dice Man Cometh.
That we will. That is lush. In fact, it's so lush that is the lush remix of Precious Hearts by INXS. You're listening to the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Seat of the Pants Radio. No computers here, folks. We're fully hand-drolic. And coming up, we're going to be having our interview with Neil Thompson of the BorderCon organising team. Trent and I are very excited to be going back for our second BorderCon. But before we get onto that, let me just remind you that we have our own convention here in Hobart, Devil Island Con or DICON. We mentioned that the Van Diemen's Wargamers will be there with their 40K tournament and their, their fantasy tournament, their Warmer Hordes tournament. We will be there having the fourth annual, yes, you heard me correct, the fourth annual Hobart Winter Games Fest. We've had it for the last 3 years. We've had one day of gaming and a little bit of extra on the Sunday. This year we have two whole days of gaming, and we are going to be playing board games like you've never seen from midday to midnight both days. Trent's having some problems with the technology. Would you like me to come and help you there, mate?
Am I ever?
Why don't you talk about BorderCon for a second?
Yeah, look, BorderCon is coming up on the Queen's birthday long weekend in Albury, and look, basically it's called BorderCon because it happens obviously near the border of all these different states. You've got the ACT contingent that comes down, we get people from South Australia coming over, and of course the Victorians and the Taswegians coming up. It costs $10. You can rock up and just pay that on the day. They usually get about 100 to 140 people in the room there playing all sorts of board games at any point during the day, and maybe about 400 people by the time everyone sort of comes in and out over the course of the long weekend. There's also a really big family contingent that's part of it. They have a kids' corner, which is absolutely fantastic, and a lot of the kids who have been going there for the past 10 years have kind of almost grown up with BorderCon. Can you tell that I'm padding and stretching this talk break out as long as possible, because we're trying desperately to get the computers and the CD players to work here in the studio, and of course
computer doesn't like this USB stick.
Nothing is working here in the studio this evening. Listen, let's just go to another song and maybe just call this show off tonight, because frankly it's been a bit of a technical disaster. We're awesome. Mark and I are fantastic. The Dice Men are as great as ever. It's everything else letting us down tonight here in the Edge Radio studio.
You know who haven't let us down tonight?
Who's that?
Who haven't let us down tonight?
Who hasn't let us down tonight, Mark? This is Mark's big last segue for the show.
The French. The French haven't let us down tonight. Plastic Bertrand, he didn't let us down tonight, unlike the computers here, unfortunately. We're still trying to get them up and running. You are listening to Edge Radio 99.3, the diesel version, with Trent and Mark. Trent has gone out of the studio, madly trying to get in touch with the Edge Radio staff. If you're listening, give us a call, send us a text, help us log into the computer. But look, while he's out, I'm going to just talk a bit about the Hobart Game Society, because we're having a bit of a... We've been talking about a renaissance in gaming in Hobart. We're having a bit of a renaissance at the Hobart Game Society, actually. The last three meetings we've had more than 30 people attend. I don't know what we've done recently, but we seem to have broken the seal and allowed a whole bunch of new people to come on board and believe it or not, they're coming back for a second and a third and a fourth time. It's actually very exciting times. Now, you might be saying to yourself, how can I get in on this action? Well, let me answer that question for you. Firstly, if you're in Hobart, come along to the Hobart Board Games Society. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Hobart Games Society. You can find out when all our meetings are there. We have events listed there. Of course, if you come to the Dice Men Cometh Facebook page and hit us up there and say, hey, Trent and Mark, how can I get in touch with Hobart Games Society? We'll tell you the same thing. You can go to our webpage, hogs.org.au, where you can find out details about what we're up to. You can also find out details about the upcoming 4th Annual Hobart Winter Games Fest, where Trent and I will be. And remember, we'll also be at BorderCon. If you want to come and talk to us and play a game with us there, we'll be there at BorderCon. And if you're outside of Hobart, you can obviously fly down to Hobart for the weekend of the 9th and 10th of August. Remember, we've got special accommodation rates at the Best Western Hotel. You just get to give the secret code, Ellison Hawker. That's the secret code to get the discounted room rates. So there's two fantastic conventions. But the game group is going great guns at the moment. We would love to see you there. We haven't had any more luck with the computers. But you know what? If people say to me, hey, Mark, it's time for you to stop talking and go throw to a track, you know what I say? Don't tell me the time. Yes, the beautiful Martha Davis from after her motel days where she was travelling solo. Don't tell me the time. I love that track. I saw her live in Sydney in the 80s. She was beautiful.
You know, Mark, I didn't think it was possible, but it's happened.
Oh.
There's been something worse about the show tonight than your taste in music. I didn't think it was ever going to happen. But there you go.
Oh, dear.
This has been an attempt at putting out an episode of The Dice Man Cometh. We apologise for the technical snafus this evening. I particularly apologise to Neil Thompson from BorderCon. We were trying to bring you the interview with him that I pre-recorded just a couple of days ago. We'll try and bring that for you next week.
I'm sure we'll have it next week.
Yeah.
Until then, keep on listening to live radio because you never know what's going to happen in the world of live radio. I'm Mark. He's Trent. We're The Dice Man Cometh. This is the steam-powered version of Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We're going to leave you with one, maybe two, maybe 10 tracks of Jeff Lang. He lives in his head a lot these days. It's probably a safer place to live than in this radio station. We'll see you next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.